10 seconds to go. We need a Minneapolis miracle. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Off by Diggs. Stay home. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Pass the 30. No. 10. Touchdown. Are you kidding me?
Miracle finish.
It's a Minneapolis miracle. Oh, my God. No way. Oh. What a miracle finish.
And welcome to the State of Purple podcast, where we talk about the state of the purple inside the state of purple. Hey, Jack, how's it going, man?
Doing well. It was a fun weekend outside of sports in Minnesota. I guess I can't clump the Wild into that category because the Wild are playing well, and the Wild know how to finish. But the Vikings and the Gophers, on the other hand, they do not know how to finish.
Well, don't let the Timberwolves off the hook either. They played some stinkers this last week as well. Melting down in the second half, much like our Minnesota Vikings. I'm AJ Mansour. He's Jack Day. We are here to discuss another second half meltdown, overtime meltdown, against the Baltimore Ravens, where the Minnesota Vikings dropped that game 34-31 on Sunday. Same script, Jack. We talked about this. You've heard it on air with all the KFAN guys. Fan line, we talked about it. Overtime, we talked about it. We've seen this movie before. It's a different opponent, but we've seen this movie before.
Yeah, at this point, it feels like it's never ending. It's just going to kind of keep coming at us. The Vikings are going to be close in games, but never close enough, apparently. And I kind of want to – I didn't know if I wanted to say this towards the end of the show or the top of the show, but I think I'll start with it, and you can kind of go run with it too. But they said something during the broadcast that I wanted to bring up right away. Right when I heard this word, I was like – this is something that we need to talk about. And they were talking about Lamar Jackson, and they were the word they said, he's fearless. Lamar Jackson's out there saying, nope, we're staying out here on fourth down when they're down on the goal line. And I just wanted to kind of ask a rhetorical question. When was the last time you've looked at the Minnesota Vikings and said, that offense is fearless? Because for me, I haven't done that in the Kirk Cousins era. I've been a Kirk Cousins supporter. I know you've been a Kirk Cousins supporter. But it just doesn't feel the same. Lamar Jackson is going out there, and obviously Lamar Jackson and Kirk Cousins are two completely different quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson is known for his legs, whereas Kirk Cousins isn't. But that 3rd and 9 in overtime, where he kind of, first off, I think Sage Rosenfels tweeted something out saying there was an audible where Kirk could have called into a different protection and that blitz would have gotten picked up. They would have had enough guys to cover that blitz. And on top of that, going back to what we talked about after that Cincinnati game, he had time to kind of fade out to the right side and let those routes progress down the field. And it was really weird in that situation where, one, he got the pressure in his face and immediately threw it away, but there wasn't a check down. That was the weirdest thing. After we've seen Kirk Cousins check it down on 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11 frequently this season, he doesn't even have an option to do it there. And I think when the Vikings got Kirk Cousins, and it was Kirk Cousins, Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum, I think most people in the state, myself included, understood that Kirk Cousins should have been looked at as the answer. He was the best quarterback out of that grouping. But the last time this offense felt fearless to me was when Case Keenum was running. And that doesn't mean Case Keenum is a better quarterback than Kirk Cousins, because I don't think that's true. But he played with a different style, and that's what they were talking about with Lamar Jackson. You see him go out there, and he is fearless. Kirk Cousins is not fearless. The offensive scheme is not fearless. Everything underneath the Vikings umbrella seems far from fearless. And honestly, it seems more fearful when they're trying not to lose games rather than going out and winning these football games.
I would agree. And I'll comment on that in 1 second. Just a quick reminder, though, for everyone who's live streaming with us right now, just like Sean on YouTube, you can throw your comment in the comment section and maybe get it on the screen. Sean has a suggestion that Mike Zimmer and his whole staff need to go. We'll get to that later, Jack, I'm sure. But what I'm wondering, Jack, is you use the term fearless. What if we use the term confidence? Because I think it's a very similar, if not the same thing. I'm not sure, not necessarily that Kirk Cousins isn't confident in his abilities. I think that he's not confident in this offense. And what does that tell you? What does that tell you as far as whether it's his just general confidence with him in that big moment? Is it a Kirk thing, or is it his lack of confidence in the offensive play calling? We know that we have an inexperienced first-year offensive coordinator who had some growing pains at the beginning of the year and is still working through some things there. And we hear these little things. We talked about it for the last couple of weeks, Jack. As this team continues to lose, and they continue to lose in this, you know, meltdown fashion, the players are going to start talking. Adam Thielen was saying some things last week. Kirk Cousins is now, you know, throwing the coach under the bus last week, saying that it's not his job to call that timeout at the end of the game. This year, this week, talking about the different progressions and the plays and how that play was a slow developing play on that 3rd and 9 in overtime that you're referencing. And why would you? He didn't say this, but he was alluding to the fact that why do you call that play when you know that this is a team that is going to bring the pressure? You start to hear these players that are going to be talking, and they're not going to stick up for the coach anymore, and they're not going to stick up for bad decisions and take the blame that isn't earned, right? They're gonna pass that blame, and that's what we're starting to see. So I wonder if there is a confidence issue, and I do think it's twofold. I think it's confidence in Kirk in the big situations where it just envelops him a little bit and he becomes overwhelmed, and then a confidence in that offense as well. Do you think, Jack, that confidence and fearlessness in this context can kind of be synonyms?
Yeah, I think it's the same exact thing, and I think going into Kirk Cousins' game style and how we've seen it, it's just so weird because over his last 6-7 years, we know what Kirk Cousins brings to the table. He's an accurate quarterback. He can make the biggest throws in this league, but it's almost like he doesn't, and I don't know if this is kind of going against what you said, but sometimes it just doesn't feel like, whether that's trust in himself, trust in his offensive line, trust in his wide receivers. We saw Case Keenum throw up more 50-50 balls than I remember seeing any other quarterback in my lifetime, and that's not always a good thing. But the great quarterbacks have that ability where they trust their wide receivers. Patrick Mahomes, there's times where he can't even see down the field and he's just throwing at 70 yards, 65 yards in the air and hoping that Tyreek Hill is going to come down with the football. Right. The Vikings have good enough wide receivers to do that. They've had good enough wide receivers to do that since Kirk Cousins arrived here, with whether that was Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen or now Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen. It's just so frustrating. I don't know. I think there's multiple layers to it. I'm not going to sit here and just say it was 100% on Kirk Cousins, because the first touchdown of the game was Justin Jefferson left a cornerback kind of dancing. He was shoeless after that almost. He ran right past him. Kirk Cousins threw a good enough ball, hit him right in stride, and it was a touchdown. That was the last of that. There was no more big shots they took down the field, and that's just frustrating. I don't know if that's a play calling thing where it's, hey, we're up by 24-10. Let's try to run this ball down. And
well, I mean, Jack, I'm sorry to interrupt you. That's the exact same thing that we've talked about for the last couple of weeks. That was the first drive of the game for them, this scripted, pre-planned drive. And I'm looking at the comments that are coming in here. Ebo on YouTube is commenting saying he's only comfortable playing within the system. He enjoys following directions and is afraid to go out the direction that he's given. We talk about Brett Favre and how he was a gunslinger. That phrase has been used. I don't know what the opposite of a gunslinger is, but that's what Kirk Cousins is, right? We kind of poke fun at it with the sense that, you know, he wears his khaki pants and his button-up shirts, and he's a clean-cut, follow-directions kind of guy. This is how that kind of a person, that kind of a leader, that kind of a personality translates onto the football field. You don't have the adaptability. You don't have the ability to run like Lamar does. So you have to, you know, do some other things. Part of it is maybe he's being conservative, right? You're not going to take chances that are unnecessary. We've seen a lot of players do that, right? You throw a lot of interceptions. Jameis Winston is a guy who takes a lot of chances, maybe unnecessarily, and throws a lot of interceptions. But he also takes the cover off the defense and throws deep and scores a lot of touchdowns. Kirk is like the opposite of that gunslinging ability, and it's that scripted first drive. You talk about that Jefferson play, that's the scripted first drive, and then once it gets off, they don't know what to do.
Yeah, and on top of that, there's no way if you and I can sit here and kind of know that this is going to happen throughout the game. Vikings fans, I saw it all over Twitter. If they're starting to recognize that, the members of the media are starting to recognize that, how are opposing coaches that are going up against the Vikings, how are they not going to recognize that? Because it's the same thing week in and week out. And I'm not going to sit up here and say the Vikings need to stop running the football. They have Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook's one of the best running backs in the league. And I think I'm pretty sure it was like 28 passing attempts to 24. It was a fairly balanced game. But they don't try outside of that first series. They try to expose. I mean, I think Ravens 32nd, the 32nd ranked passing defense going into this game, and they don't try to expose that more. It doesn't make sense to me. when you know you have an accurate quarterback, you have Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, KJ Osborne emerging, Tyler Conklin starting to play well, wide receiver one, CJ Ham is really starting to get step into his own as well, and then you have a pass-catching running back like Dalvin Cook. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know where it comes from, if it's a Kubiak thing, if Zimmer is kind of holding the keys of this entire team and he's holding the team back. Whatever it is, it has to stop, or this is going to be a lost season. It already feels like a lost season, but sure, there's no way this team is going to bounce back if they can't try to figure that out.
Well, I'm going to pull up a comment here from Kenny from the Facebook chat, who's ripping us for saying we only respond to negative Kirk Cousins comments. You must be new here, because it's as far from the truth as possible. We've been probably some of the biggest proponents for Kirk Cousins, and we're not saying that he's the reason that we lost this game. Specifically, we were talking about the Justin Jefferson play, the play at the beginning of the game that was scripted, and then what went wrong afterwards. There's a bunch of hands in that, right? There is Clint Kubiak. There is Mike Zimmer. There is the offense. There is, you know, this comment here. Ebo dropped in another good comment about how after that Anthony Barr interception, it looked crazy on the sidelines. They weren't ready to go back out there. And Ben Lieber talked about that today on the Power Trip, actually saying it was chaos on the sidelines. The offense wasn't ready to go back out there. The play call got in late, and they ended up having to call a timeout, almost taking a delay of game coming out of that interception. And then they go three and out after that. So we are definitely not negative Kirk Cousins. We do understand that he has flaws and that we see them. Okay. So if the defense does some things that maybe impact the way that he plays, and the Minnesota Vikings continue to not score points in the second quarter and the third quarter, and then leave it up to Kirk in the 2-minute drive. Kirk's been fantastic in the 2-minute drive all season. He's the reason why this team is in those games towards the end of the game. The reason why they lose them is because they're not good enough. The reason why they lose them is because they're too conservative. The reason why they lose them is because they make dumb mistakes, whether it be the coaches or the players, towards the end of the game. That's the reason why they lose him. It's not Kirk Cousins' fault, but that doesn't mean, Jack, that he's perfect.
Yeah, and there's plenty of blame to go around for not only this game, but this season, some of the losses that they've had. But going into this game, 34 points looks like a lot. Yes, it was an overtime game where they got to that 34 with the field goal, but 34 points feels like a lot of points. And it is a lot of points, but the Vikings went into this game without Danielle Hunter, Michael Pearson. I'll say this first. I know the Ravens are banged up too. The Ravens are not a healthy football team. But the Vikings didn't have Michael Pierce, Danielle Hunter, Patrick Peterson, or Harrison Smith. That's arguably four of their top five, top six players on that defense. And for the defense to go out and play the way that it did, you see Cameron Bynum was the highest graded Viking in the entire game with, I think it was a 90 flat, exactly a 90 PFF grade. And he had that interception. You have Anthony Barr's huge interception in overtime, and the offense just could not capitalize on that. And the defense, on top of that, going one step further, the Ravens had the ball for 46 minutes compared to the Vikings having the ball for 23 minutes.
Right.
That is a recipe for disaster. And the fact that this defense even was able to hang around in this football game after being on the field for what felt like the entire duration of the game, I thought that was extremely impressive.
Well, we also have to remember that the Kenny Wangu kick return came at the beginning of the second half. Now, we can't take that away. We shouldn't take that away. We shouldn't not give them credit for that. But if you take that off the board, this game is not close. They do lose in regulation, and they don't score at all until that final 3-minute drive in the fourth quarter or 2-minute drive in the fourth quarter. It was a complete stall of the offense. Ron Johnson brought up on Fanline yesterday something about the Minnesota Vikings and their average yards to go on second down is 8.5 yards to go on second down. That leaves you with a 1.5 yard gain on first down because you did some predictable run like they always do. They do something silly on second down that gets you about 5 yards, right? That's their average yards per play on second down. And it leaves you with a third and short, which is manageable. But at the same time, if you're banged up front, we've had an injured running back, we've had a quarterback that gets blitzed and freaks out. If you're not a dynamic offense, you can't just guarantee that a third and three is going to be converted. Yesterday, third downs were a struggle. Fourth downs were a struggle. They had this opportunity to do this, and they just couldn't get it going. So there's a lot that went into that. At the end of the day, Jack, this team went in, I think, 7.5 point underdogs into this game. They end up losing by 3 in overtime, but everybody feels more dejected than I think that they normally would when you you cover and you get within that point spread. A game that they should have lost, but the way that they lost it left everyone feeling like they're a kicked little puppy dog.
Yeah, and that's just – it gets worse every week, I think, too, when it happens over,
when it goes over, yeah,
and
right,
over and over again. And it's just – it's frustrating being in that situation. And I think it's frustrating, too, when you – it happens over and over and over again. Adam Thielen brought this up in his press conference today, too. I think it makes it even more frustrating, like, if you tune into these press conferences, because I know I said this to AJ before we even hopped in here and the show went live – I'm starting to kind of feel like a broken track record talking about this over and over. So I can't imagine having to be Adam Thielen or Justin Jefferson, Kirk Cousins, any of the coaching staff going up to the podium week after week after week when it's literally the same thing happening week in and week out. So it's frustrating. I think there were some positives that came out of this game, but at the end of the day, the Vikings are 3-5. After another game that it felt like after that Anthony Barr interception, it felt like all the momentum had shifted. They were going to drive down the field. I know most Vikings fans didn't want to see it end with the field goal, with Greg Joseph kicking a field goal, but it felt like they had the chance and the offense fell flat on their face. I know there's plenty of blame. I should have said something too after you said this on that last comment. I have been one of the biggest Kirk Cousins supporters. You can go to kfan.com. You're going to see article after article me sticking up for Kirk Cousins. But when he struggles and when, going back to what we were saying, when he doesn't look confident and he looks fearful rather than fearless, that's when you start to see this, hey, it's a 500 Kirk Cousins. That's when the narratives start to come out about him. And if that continues, it's going to be a long, long road for this franchise for the next, probably for the foreseeable future, unless they tend, or if they part ways with them in 2022, there is that $45 million cap hit, but we can save that for an offseason show. We don't need to get into that today.
Right. And you know, again, Kirk Cousins did not lose the game yesterday for this team, but he didn't win it either. Like, he kept them in it. He got them in to tie the game with the touchdown at the last minute, but he ended with 187 yards passing. Two touchdowns. One of those touchdowns came on the first drive of the game. That other touchdown came on the last drive of the regular game. So there's a lot of time in between there where Kirk was not doing well. And you can't look at it any different way, right? Play calling goes into that. Defense goes into that. There is other things that go into that. But when you have a game that you have in hand, for all intents and purposes, this game should have been in hand. It was a double-digit lead that the Vikings blew. They got it back to overtime. Then they pick him off. Anthony Barr has that fantastic pickoff, and you have an opportunity to gain 25, 30 yards to get in field goal range, and you gain one yard. You go 3 and out, and you end up giving the ball back to Baltimore. They go down and kick the field goal. And the rest is history, right? It's just frustrating, right? And we're at a point where this team continues. I know the first look at like the draft standings or the current draft order started trickling out on Twitter today. I think the Vikings are slotted in at number 12, but they're one loss away from like being a top four pick. That's the point in the season where we're at, where we're not talking about playoffs anymore. We're kind of assuming that at some point in time, the coach will lose his job. And we're looking to see what the draft pick will be in the first round. It's not always a bad thing, right? But it's a disappointing thing when we thought that this was the year that Green Bay could be had. This was the year that the division could be, you know, won back for the Vikings, and they're performing far below their ability. We still believe, Jack, I'll let you speak for yourself. I still believe that there's a lot of talent on this team, but for whatever reason, they're not putting it together in a successful game plan.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of talent on this team. And it's funny. I mean, you say that we're so close to having a top four draft pick. They're also extremely close to somehow snagging that 7 seed in the playoffs. That's just how the NFL is moving forward now. I'm not a huge fan of adding on to the playoffs, but there's a legitimate chance. I think I saw, I could be wrong on this, so correct me if you know, but I think there are only two real competitors right now for that 7 seed is the San Francisco 49ers and the Atlanta Falcons. Two also extremely mediocre teams, in my opinion, right now. They could get better. They could get worse. So it's weird. We're just at a weird point with this team because if they go and they win a couple games, which I think you and I both know that they're capable of doing so. I don't think either of us have that feeling that they're going to, but I think we both know they're capable. So they could find themselves right back in the running for the 7th seed and wild card spot. or the season could easily go the other direction where we're talking, hey, the Vikings have their first top five pick in what feels like, I don't even know when their last top five pick would have been. That would have been
Matt Khalil.
Yeah. Was he fourth? I think he was fourth overall.
Matt Khalil draft. Let's look it up here, right? The joy of the internet. I think he was fourth. Why doesn't it tell me? Come on now.
Fourth sounds right. And that would just be, it's a weird draft class too. And you can, you get this pulled up, feel free to interrupt me, but it's a weird draft class in the fact that this is a pretty heavy defensive draft class. And there's not really a clear cut number one at quarterback. So the Vikings, if they slide all the way down to that point, it was four.
Yep.
What year was that?
2012.
Okay. If they do slide down in that top five range, there's a lot of mock drafts that don't even have a quarterback going in the top five right now. There's a lot, like I said, a lot of defensive guys, a lot of wide receivers. Again, that's starting to become a pretty normal theme every single year. But if the Vikings want to make a switch there, if there's a new regime, I know you and I have talked about this in shows in the past. If there's a new regime that comes in here, more often than not, it seems like they want to switch. And I'm not saying Kirk Cousins is the problem when I'm saying this, but that's if a new regime comes in and they think Kirk Cousins is the problem, or maybe not even the problem, but like I said, they don't think he's confident enough in his abilities, they might look into the draft this year and look at some of these quarterbacks. You see Matt Corral playing well. You see Carson Strong, who we talked about last week, playing well. There are quarterbacks, like I said, they might slide out of that top five, which could be a good thing if the new regime comes in and that's the direction they want to go. But we're in for a long ride right now where we don't know the direction of the season. I think you and I are both on the same boat where we think it's going to be more negative than not. But then you get in the draft season, and I have no idea what direction this team's going to go. If Mike Zimmer is still somehow here, if it is still Rick Spielman and Mike Zimmer, does that mean they draft another cornerback and the state of Minnesota riots, or is there a new regime in here and they do draft a quarterback? Who knows? That remains to be seen. But it's going to be another long season and I think an even more interesting offseason.
We'll close the show in a few minutes with the topic that everyone wants to talk about, with the coaching situation and the future for Mike Zimmer. But Jack, I know you mentioned that you had a couple positives that you could pull from this game. There were some players that stood out. There were some situations that stood out. Tell me a few things that maybe, if we're writing this season off, looking to the future was good, or just even for this season, what did you like from this game?
Yeah, there were some young guys that came in because of injuries and had to step up, injuries/COVID. Cameron Bynum, the cornerback, changed safety. I think he was a fourth-round draft pick for the Vikings this year out of the University of California, was the highest-graded PFF player for the Vikings. That is pretty rare. He was a guy that throughout training camp kind of said that he was going to stick in Harrison Smith's back pocket. I think that showed on Sunday. He played fantastic. He jumped. He had a press conference earlier today as well, and he said they were kind of studying all week Mark Andrews on that little go route that he ran, and he knew that was coming, and he jumped it instantly for his interception. It was a pretty good catch for a defensive back as well.
Fantastic catch.
That was fun to see. He was also – not only was he good in that area, it was fun watching him. I have it written down here. He was second on the team with 12 total tackles. He has a nose for the football. He has some solid hands. I think that I saw another tweet, and I don't want to be negative while I'm being positive, but there is someone talking about, well, what's the future with Harrison Smith? He just signed a 4-year, like $64 million contract. What happens with him if this regime does transition and they want to make changes to some veterans? Who knows? But Cameron Bynum playing well, that is a fantastic thing for the Vikings, because they really haven't been able to say that much for any of this rookie class that they have. Another rookie with the kick return, Kini Nwangu. That was one of the more electric plays, one of the more exciting things I think we've got to see during a Vikings game. I know you've been excited to see his speed get out there on the field, and it was fun watching him return one of the house. Mason Cole played well at center, filling in for Bradbury. Had a better game than Bradbury's had in the last year and a half. Kenny Willicks was a seventh-round draft pick for the Vikings last year out of Michigan State. He was the one – he had some weird videos of him, like, doing the splits last year during the offseason where he was just, like, a super flexible guy. He came in and played well without having Danielle Hunter. There was still a legitimate pass rush, and that comes down to him. James Lynch played well. Armin Watts is putting together a fantastic season. We got to hear Sheldon Richardson's name yesterday, which felt like it was the first time we've heard that all season. So there were some positives. Justin Jefferson confirmed, still good at football. Maybe they should start throwing him the ball a little bit more, but there are a lot of positives. And I want to take that one step further, because you and I talked about how if a new regime comes in, it's going to be kind of a rebuild. That might not really be the case. And that was kind of the stance that you took when we brought that up, because there is so much talent. If these last couple draft classes, you start to have a couple guys from the fourth, fifth, sixth round start to play some meaningful football, and they look like, hey, these guys are, they're not only were they fourth, fifth round draft picks, weren't expecting much, but they're actually getting some playing time and they're playing fairly well. That's what you want to see when the season feels like it's lost. I think you and I both, and I'm in the boat where if the season is completely lost, Kellen Mond better start getting some time, at least dressed on the sidelines. I know that's not going to be a common thing. I don't need to say that maybe Kellen Mond should start seeing some snaps if the season is completely lost and the Vikings are eliminated from the playoffs. But why not at least see what you have with some of these rookies? Another one is Chaz Surratt, who didn't even dress yesterday. Just, it's kind of weird how they've always handled their rookies a little bit differently, but it would be nice to kind of start to see some of these guys get some meaningful playing time, because when you have Cameron Bynum and Nwangu come in and they look good, it's like, hey, maybe these other guys have some skills too, and they're just kind of being held back because of there's a guy on a one-year deal, a veteran that's going to take that spot. We had that conversation as well, but it was fun seeing some of those rookies get in there. Overall, it was a frustrating loss, but there are some small positives to take away from this game.
Sometimes you have to dig deep for those positives, but they do exist. All right, Jack, the coaching situation. We've talked about it for weeks now. Has your mindset changed at all about whether or not the Vikings will make a coaching shift and when they should make a coaching change?
I wouldn't really say that it's changed. I'm at the point now where if I got an alert at any point throughout the day, I don't think I would be shocked. I don't think you'd be surprised. If it were to be Rick Spielman, Mike Zimmer, I would be surprised if the Vikings somehow moved on from Kirk Cousins. I don't think that's anywhere remotely close, especially in 2021. Like I said, that $45 million cap hit's a little bit scary. So maybe they find a way out of that if it is a complete, I say complete, but a sort of a mini rebuild. But no, I think there's been coaching decisions that have been made where there's weird stuff between the quarterback, the head coach, the offensive coordinator. There's just like this weird love slash hate triangle, whatever you want to call it. But it's frustrating. I don't think those three pieces are going to work. I don't know if it's a thing where, hey, Mike Zimmer brings in yet another offensive coordinator. I don't think that's a good thing either, because Kirk Cousins isn't Clint Kubiak like his sixth or seventh offensive coordinator already? This is his fourth season in Minnesota, but he was on a stretch where it was like six or seven different offensive coordinators in a row, and another year, another new offensive coordinator. They can't really find that continuity that they always talk about. I know they kind of talk about it in the offseason. It's like, no, Clint's going to come in here. He has a lot of what Kevin Stefanski ran, a lot what his dad ran here. That doesn't seem to be the case. The offense is struggling. I don't know if that's a Zimmer thing, if Zimmer's kind of using his head coaching title and using his powers to say, hey, no, you have to give it to Delvin here, be conservative. I don't know what the case is, but I think I speak for most of this fan base, most of the people that follow this team. I think the time is now for a change. And I say that after saying Mike Zimmer has been, in my opinion, the best coach the Vikings have had in my lifetime. Kirk Cousins has probably been one of the better quarterbacks that they've had in my lifetime. But at the end of the day, if something's not working, there has to be change. And that's where the Minnesota Vikings are currently.
By no means do I say this in the sense that it's an opportunity to save Mike Zimmer's job. I think that ship has sailed. I think it's a post, maybe I change my mind on this every day, maybe a postseason move that they make there. What I do want to see sooner than that is maybe a change of the offensive coordinator position. I get it. We're eight games in to Clint Kubiak's situation. But what I want to see is I want somebody to come in, whether they're internal or external. It's not exactly the time of year that you hire for a new offensive coordinator. But I want you to give it to somebody, you know, one of those guys that's on the offensive side of the ball, maybe a quarterback's coach. I don't have a name even necessarily, but you give them the opportunity and say, take the top off this thing. Open up this offense. Get creative. Do some different things. Because I really do want to find out, before we bring somebody in, can Kirk do that? Can Dalvin do that? Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, do these pieces that we have, do they fit what everybody wants, right? It's easy to say we want an offense that gets creative and does new things and opens up the top and is aggressive, but maybe we don't have the players to do that, right? So if you're going to find out anything, right, you're not necessarily looking or auditioning for a new head coach or auditioning for a new offensive coordinator, but you need to figure out the quarterback situation, because we don't think Kellen Mond is the answer, or he's been coming along much slower than we thought. So next year it's going to be Kirk. If you bring in an aggressive offensive play caller, is that even going to work with Kirk? Is it going to work with the players that you have here? Or do you need to find something to adapt and change that as well? That's maybe what I would want to see first. Again, let's say it goes great. Let's say it goes awesome and they end up winning and they either barely make the playoffs or don't. I still think that Mike Zimmer needs maybe a shift in leadership at top of the team. The defense is not doing what the defense used to do, right? That's not the offense is not the only problem here. The offense is the frustrating part for fans, because I think that they see the offensive and it makes more sense to them what they're doing. And we see things that we like in Kansas City and that we like in Cleveland and with all these new up and coming coaches, and we don't see it here. So we have that desire for it. But the defense has been just as bad, right? They're going to open the floodgates in that second half, let Baltimore drive right down the field to take the lead, to get that 31st point and the 24th point. You have that opportunity there. The defense isn't doing it either. So I think that he's lost control of this team. And at this point, that you don't get that back by sticking around and sticking it through. You get it back by making a change. So I think it'll happen. But the immediacy of the situation, I do want to see something change, whether Zimmer takes the reins off of Kubiak or I don't know who's holding it back. But I'm sick of this offense being held back, because I want to see. I think that it could be explosive. We've seen glimpses of it, but can they do that for a 60-minute game? Can that be their offensive style that they carry to each game? Or is it just a flash in the pan that we see every once in a while when we exploit a weakness or something like that? That's the question I have there for you. Jack, we'll sign off here for today. We'll be back later this week to preview the upcoming game against the Los Angeles Chargers, another tough game. It was a 2.5-point spread as of yesterday. My guess is that that's already moved a little bit in favor of the Chargers, and it'll continue to move this week as Justin Herbert continues to get hot and the Minnesota Vikings continue to struggle. Harrison Smith already be ruled out for next week's game. It's a non-vaccinated situation. You're out for 10 days. Minimum. And so he tested positive Sunday. That means he'll be out until the midweek next week. So he will miss this game upcoming. We'll see Cam Bynum. We'll see Kirk Cousins. We'll see these players. No real injuries to talk of that we know of. I'm sure something will pop up and surprise us. And Sunday morning, someone will not be able to play. I think I did hear, Jack, in the beginning of the game, the broadcast, Mike Zimmer did a pre-recorded interview with PA. They usually record that like on a Thursday or Friday maybe. And Zimmer said that he thought he was going to get Michael Pierce back on Sunday. That obviously didn't happen, but I think that means that we're close. I think that maybe we can look to this week, this Sunday, and say Michael Pierce could be back against the Chargers. I want to see what that defense looks like when it's designed and played up front the way that they put it together. So that'll be a big thing for them to get there too. Any final thoughts, Jack, before we say goodbye to everybody?
Yeah, I think next week will be, it doesn't mean it's the last week without him, but Patrick Peterson, it will be the last game that he is forced to sit out because he's on IR. Bashaud Breeland is another one that'll be worth monitoring. He had the weird, he had the bloody shin but that was weird. It did look like he was in quite a bit of pain. It didn't look like it was a lot of fun. One little final note. This has been we had one little section, I think, earlier in the season on this as well. Just want to say the NFL officiating has been brutal. I'm not going to sit here and blame this game on that, because that's not the case. The Vikings lost this game, but these refs have to figure it out. It's getting almost hard to watch. I know you tweeted after this play. I tweeted after this play.
Oh, yeah.
But that tackle on Lamar Jackson, where they called it a horse collar and he literally was grabbing him by the number, I don't know if it becomes a thing where they need to have like a little headset on at all times and it goes up to the booth and like, yeah, that's the right call, or no, that wasn't the right call. But it's too many times, too many teams are getting stung by these horrible calls officiating, and it's just over and over, week in, week out. And that's frustrating. I think that it makes people want to watch the game less when there's just like flag after flag. I've seen the emoji, or not the emoji, the GIF or the picture on Twitter 1,000 times this year already, where there's like 50 to 100 flags surrounding an offense. Like, that's it's not fun watching football when it's penalty after penalty. I know the Vikings don't always make that easy because they actually commit penalty after penalty, but the NFL officiating, that's got to get figured out because it's making this game a lot harder to watch.
Absolutely. All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the State of Purple podcast. You can find old episodes and you can subscribe to this podcast on the iHeartRadio app, iTunes, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You'll know when we go live. You'll know when we are recording this, and you can partake in it just like all the guys did today. We had a bunch of them. Let's see here. Benji Jeffy, Sean, Stiggy Widdit. Let's see who else. Joe Bot Robot, Clinton. There are a bunch of people that took part in this and helped us carry this conversation. So thanks for listening along. Thanks for partaking in the interactive version as well, a live stream on all the social media channels for KFAN. But don't forget to subscribe. Subscribe to that podcast too, and you'll never miss an episode. For Jack Day, I'm AJ Mansoor. This is the State of Purple podcast. We'll see you later this week as we preview the Minnesota Vikings and the San Diego Chargers. See you later, Jack.
Seconds to go. We need a Minneapolis miracle. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side.